rides his pony down life's lane, searching for the why of all the pain he knows. It'll never be the same.
Hey, Legs.
Hi, Lizzie. Good morning.
How are you doing this morning?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm doing well. We decided we're going to do a little intro, and so this is the first time. And this is the Punk Farm Love Life podcast. We talk about living the slow life, bicycles. That sounds like we're living bicycles. We talk about living the slow life. We talk about bicycles, music, regenerative farming, relationships, all under the ethos of punk philosophies. And as we always like to say, do stuff, don't buy stuff, unless it's a bicycle. And then we also like to give our definition of punk, because there are some things that people might think are punk that aren't. And so we want to make sure everybody knows what we're talking about. And our definition is unity, DIY, nonconformity, strength, speaking out against injustice. It's community, compassion, equality, and peace, and damn good music.
Right on.
And today we're continuing our slow week, our slow life week, and this episode is about slow culture. And you're going to start us off?
Yes, slow culture. So in our prior episodes this week of Punk Life, we've been talking about the slow life movement, and what that means. And what originally started out as a slow food movement in Italy has now branched out, and people are embracing it in other areas of life. And now there are various ways people are practicing this. One of the big ones that has grown over the years, it's what's called slow art. And slow art just happened this last Saturday, April 13th, all over the world. There are about 100 countries, and I think it's been done at something like 1,500 museums over the course of, or the period of time since it got started, and it continues to grow. And so the idea behind this is that people go in on this specific day and are allowed to take their time to look at art. And so how this got started was back in 2008, a gentleman, Phil Terry, visited the Jewish Museum in New York, and he found that instead of going through the whole museum, he decided to just focus on two paintings. And those paintings were Hans Hofmann's Fantasia and Jackson Pollock's Convergence. And it made him think that, well, maybe some other people would be really interested in going through and looking at pieces of art in a slower way. Because it's studies have been found that most people, when they go through museums, only look at a piece of whatever they're looking at for roughly 15 to 30 seconds.
Wow.
And so, and as if all of us have gone to museums before, also, it's great, very crowded. So it's sometimes you can't even get there and just take your time because you're getting moved along. So part of this, you know, day, the slow art day, is that the museums are allowing you to spend this time, this extra time, 10 minutes roughly, or 15 minutes on a piece, where you just, you just sit there and take your time, take it all in. And so, you know, the first thing I will start on, and this is really, something that made me think, was this quote, which is by Henry David Thoreau, which says, "It's not what you look at that matters, it's what you see." And so they're finding that if you slow down and you look at things and you don't feel rushed, that it's going to allow you to really take in what that possibly that artist was trying to convey in their works. And this way, you know, it has all of these other benefits for people if they start applying that to their normal life. So this was sort of a way for you to pick a day, do something you might love, going to a museum, feel, you know, getting the feeling of what it is like, taking your time doing something a little bit slower, taking it really in, and possibly applying it to other parts of your life. And what that is, you know, like I said, there has been this whole, since the slow food movement started in the 80s, it has now been applied to travel, fashion, fitness, gardening, interior design, thinking, news, working. And it's all an arts offshoot. And there's all these organizations that, in those specific mediums, support you in trying to apply the slow life to those other areas of your life. And we have a dog that's...
Come here, buddy. Come here. Someone's mowing their lawn as well.
Exactly. So, you know, what I found interesting is that if, you know, neuroscience has confirmed that ancient artists knew something that we really are not applying when we go and look at pieces of art. And that is that we only see a tiny fraction of what is around us. To widen the lens and allow more in, we must slow down. So that would be something, again, now we're talking about Slow Art Day, but it also applies to when you're walking through your neighborhood and you're seeing a person's garden or hopefully their little farm in their garden. And so it just allows you to breathe a little bit more deeply, take a little bit slower pace, and seeing what's going on in your life. And so what they found is also is that when you start taking time, you love things more. So people that took time to look at art at a slower pace begin to love art more. They get inspired to do their own art. And you know, art is not about, and I'm of course reading Rick Rubin's book, and he talks about this. Art is not about the end result that's going to be shown to somebody else. It's the art, it's just the fact of doing it and creating art for art's sake and for your own inspiration, and that you should just have fun with it and not worry about what other people think, which goes back, you know, to what we talk about, the punk ethos. Punk people generally don't care what other people think, especially about the way they look, the way they think, their beliefs and what have you. And so if you apply that punk philosophy, that ethos to this, you know, you do your own thing. And it allows you to be more creative and more open with the things you do in your life.
Could I ask a quick question?
Yep.
So on the museum, how do they manage it, since the museums are so crowded, and when they have new shows, like, they barely can fit the people? That would it just be, it wouldn't be obviously a new show, it would be maybe some existing part of the museum that's
exactly
slower.
Exactly. Yeah. So on that specific day, you have to get tickets, and with that
and they just stretch out the interval of the time.
Correct So it's on,
nice,
a whole planned thing. And you know, when I began researching this in more detail, I was pleasantly amazed on throughout the world how many countries and places are doing this. I believe like in Belgium, there's like 8 or 10 museums that are doing this. Of course, in the U.S., it's massive. I found it interesting that while they're doing this in Oakland, California, none of the museums in San Francisco are doing it. And I was sort of taken aback by that. So... San Jose is doing it.
Well, it has to be due to, you know, it's an economic decision if you're going to limit the amount of people coming through.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, but it's one day out of...
How can that work? Like, if everybody decided they wanted to do it and now fewer people can go in, I don't understand how the funnel works. So maybe you're on a lottery to be able to see slow art. But I guess it could also tell you, like, be on the lookout for other places to spend time with art other than the major museums that are so packed.
Exactly.
Because you could go to galleries and spend time and sit, and maybe not sit, but...
And in fact, on that day, it's not just the big museums that everyone would think of in their particular city. It's these little tiny places.
Nice.
I think there's a tiny one in Palo Alto, California, where it's just a small place, you know, but they've allotted for that day to just practice the slow life and slow art for that day to hopefully turn people onto the concept of taking their time. And I know personally, even the big museums in San Francisco, if you can have the schedule to do this or you want to make the effort, there are days that are slower than others.
Right.
Or if it's not a new exhibit and you wait for after the big rush, you could then go and take your time. And so,
and I don't think, even though you have an allotted time, I've never experienced where they're like checking up that you're out of there. They're more people are coming through and they know that there's a path. And
unless it's like, I mean, I've gone to at one of the big museums in San Francisco where it was in a room, a large room, and you were only allowed a specific amount of time as a group for that particular period to go in there. And honestly, it was okay, but we were like packed like sardines.
Right.
And, you know, there's tall people standing in front of the works of art where short people can't see it, or, you know, and or people just plant themselves in front of the piece of art and don't move. And so they're, you know, if more people embrace this.
Would you just tell them, I'm sorry, it's not slow art day?
No, I mean, I'm too polite. I just didn't say anything. And plus, I'm tall, so I can look over most people anyway. So it's okay. But I felt sorry for some people.
But those are usually the shows that are passing through.
Exactly.
There's so much art that's there all the time. And
Yeah, it's a good point. Yeah, so...
Very nice. I stopped you. Sorry.
No, no problem. So here's something that was, you know, I found really interesting about this. That really, there is this idea in the art world that it's been dominated by the thought that you need to know everything about it before you go. And therefore, art has been exclusively the domain of already educated people. And the concept here is that humans need nothing more, nothing special, to begin seeing art in this way, just slowing down. And that they have found people, once they slow down and begin to look, it triggers a curiosity inside them. And that then, when you go to, if you get interested in it, when you do go and read about it in a book or listen to a lecture, it becomes more valuable to that person because they've gone in there and been able to experience it. Now this curiosity, oh, what was this about? I really like this artist. I've never seen this before. I mean, Jackson Pollock is a unique artist. What, you know, it can be inspiring to realize that you can make a piece of art without being able to draw a person's face or a, you know, some fruit on a table. So, and that ordinary people would then be motivated and wanting to learn more. So this is a really big thing because this goes back and what we keep saying about the punk ethos or philosophy. It's saying that when you slow looking events are fundamentally non-patronizing, but more importantly, radically inclusive. So we talk about a lot of on our podcast about being inclusive and that things now, certain aspects of life don't allow, it's not for the everyman. And so by doing this way, you are following one of our, what we believe, Legs and Lizzie's ethos, punk ethos, is being inclusive. Letting everyone participate in loving art or loving whatever you're doing. And so I think that's the simplicity and the beauty of Slow Art Day or slow culture, because that's what we're talking about today, slow culture. And so I was really personally motivated by this. I can honestly say I have not always applied this thought to, I am a person that loves going to museums frequently by myself, but now I don't have to because I have Lizzie. And I did not always take the time to sit there and just look at something in detail. I'd walk by it, I'd read what it was about. If it didn't hit me right away, I would just walk by it. And I'm now realizing that, if I just took a moment to look at it in more detail, not my first impression, maybe I'm missing something. And probably am. And then I said to myself, if I'm missing it on art, what other parts of my life am I not slowing down for that I could take a time to look at and maybe just take it in a bit more, be more open-minded? I got a feeling that throughout my life I've been missing out on stuff because I've been rushing around all the time. And so, like you say always, we're in our third act. Mm-hmm. So with that, I think for this part of my life, I'm going to make an attempt to slow down and apply this idea throughout my life, more of my life, and see what benefits I get. And then I'll tell all of you about it. Lizzie will know first, but then I'll tell everybody else about it. So that's, slow art. There's more I could say, but.
So what's the, if you don't know, it's fine, we can just put in the show notes, but what's the source of that information?
So there is an organization called the Slow Art. They have a website that's labeled Slow Art.
Nice.
And so they will give you all the details and the places throughout the world where this can, where you can participate in this next year. Also, some sources of this information is one of the original people of this movement. His name is Carl Honoré, and he's an author and speaker. And he helped bring the concept of slow living into the mainstream in a 2004 book called The Praise of Slowness.
Nice.
So he took it a little bit further than just the slow food. And so there are authors out there. And if you go to the Slow Art website, and we'll put it in our show notes, they give you a lot of useful information, not just for the art day, but for slow life in general.
Nice. Yeah, I could see like going to the museum and just deciding, okay, we're going to try it that way. I think if you had a membership, I'd feel a little better about it than, you buy your ticket and you're going to just look at two things. But I wouldn't mind. And what came to mind, though, is I think I personally wouldn't just force myself to spend time with a piece that I just had a feeling of not spending time with it, right?
Right.
Like, and I feel like art strikes you in a certain way, and it's not to judge necessarily on quality of what one thing's good and one thing's bad. It's like what's happening for you.
Right. But I have a question about that. Would you, if you like a particular artist, and you like the bulk of their work, would you come upon that piece, piece of art that you weren't really keen on, and look at it a little bit more closely because overall you like that artist, or would you just walk by it because it just didn't strike you at that time?
Yeah, this is an interesting concept, because I think when you think about meditation and calming your mind to stop just letting your thoughts come through and just looking at, so what you do when you're drawing, when you're first learning to draw, it's like you think you can't draw, but then when your mind switches over to seeing the space almost as a flat screen, right? All the lines come, you're able to draw it because your mind's shifting and you can actually draw this thing that before looked like a stick figure.
Okay.
So I could see if you were allowing yourself to just get into a different state where you're seeing it on a different level. But I guess because I'm kind of controlling, the thought of someone making me sit with something that wasn't bringing me pleasure, like, I don't think I would really enjoy that.
Yeah.
Or if something was of a time or point in history where something's being documented that I don't really
care
to
subject matter
stare
is
at.
Not yet. Yeah. Subject matter is not. Well.
But I think it's really fascinating, and I think it's really cool. And to think, like, the way that we go to museums, and you go as a kid, and you're walking through, and you're seeing all this stuff, and just changing the way, okay, we're going to go see these six things, or these three things, or we're going to look in advance of who's there, and maybe go to pick what you're... I think there would be, for me, enjoyment in kind of thinking ahead, but then on maybe another day, it's just, okay, we're just going to go and sit with something and see how it goes.
Yeah,
and,
it's a hard concept. I mean, if let's say there's this like big show, like when Tutankhamun, exhibit came.
Those are more like artifacts, though.
Right, but this—that's what they're. This is all. So slow art is not is everything.
Okay.
So the point is that I found for me that sometimes I rush around because I think I'm not going to be able to see it all. So I'm not going to spend time on something that might be interesting because I might think, well, there's five pieces or pieces of art down the road that if I don't do it now, I won't ever see it. And I'm wondering if next time, if just, you know, clear my mind of that and just say, if I don't get to it, I don't get to it. I'll come back. So I don't know. I have never done this. So this would be a learning experience for me.
I'll give a big plug for, outdoor sculpture. There's places where you can go and just do a sculpture walk. And then your environment is much more calming because part of it is I could see if there's too many people, it wouldn't work as well. You really have to create a mental shield around yourself.
What's really interesting, if anybody's ever been there or want to go, like in Dublin, Ireland, they have these outdoor pieces, and they're figures of, important people. Like you'll have an Oscar Wilde, statue of him and something around it, things of that nature. And they're all over the city, and you can go there and look at it.
That's everywhere, sweetheart.
It's very particular. That is very true. They're all
but
over.
But I'm talking about fine art sculpture, not important figurines. But that's okay.
It's outdoors.
But that was awesome.
Thank you.
The recreation of historical figures is an art form. But I'm talking more fine.
Well, some of the people that made those.
Spokane has a really wonderful walking sculpture. Down by the river in downtown Spokane, and good job.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed hearing about that, and I hadn't thought about that before. We wanted to mention that we at one of our first episodes was that complete?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you have some stuff to present, and
we have some time. Talked about slow journalism. Mention the episode.
Okay, cool.
Legs. Did an episode on slow journalism, so this episode's about slow culture, so we wanted to mention that. It's one of our first episodes. Just search Legs and Lizzie, slow journalism. And then I was going to talk about a couple of articles that I found on slow, in praise of the slow bike is one article, and I found this very, very interesting and wanted to ask Legs some questions about it. So first I'm just going to share these articles, and one is by Lloyd Alter, and this was from Tree Hugger, In Praise of the Slow Bike. He refers to another article that, which we'll go to that one next, but on his website, Shifter, Tom Babin explains how to ride a bike slowly and why you'd want to. And he starts with, "This sounds stupid, I know, but one of the keys to happy urban cycling is learning how to slow down. Riding more slowly in a city is safer, calmer, more relaxing, and is conducive to being in the moment and enjoying the surroundings." So that's from Tom Babin's article. So then Lloyd goes on to say, actually, it doesn't sound stupid at all. If you ride in the city and are sharing the road or bike lane with other people on bikes, it's safer and easier to be slow. It's also more comfortable when you ride a slow bike, an urban cruiser. Tom concurs, the frame of an urban cruiser will put you in a comfortable and slow upright position, and minimal gears will keep your speed below the limit. A basket or carrier will give you plenty of hauling space with just enough risk of losing your load to keep your ride in check. All of these forces conspire to do one thing, make your ride pleasant. This is not news to tree hugger readers. Years ago, when we were writing about slow food, slow design, and slow travel, I even called for a slow car movement. I also called for a slow bike movement where we all ride in comfortable street clothes on upright step-through bikes, kind of like, I'm adding a side note, kind of like the Netherlands. Like then Reuters writer Felix Salmon, I thought that it would help attract more people to cycling. As a general rule, the propensity, this is what Felix wrote, as a general rule, the propensity of non-bicyclists to give biking a try is inversely proportional to the average velocity of the bikers they see on the street. If you live in a city where women in wedge heels are steering their old steel bikes around their daily errand route, there's really nothing intimidated or scary about the prospect of getting on a bike yourself. If it's all hipsters on fixies, by contrast, that just makes biking feel all the more alien and stupid. So next time you get on a bike, give yourself an extra 5 or 10 minutes and take your time. You'll be much happier for doing so, and your happiness is likely to prove contagious. And then just the Tom Babin article was from shifter.info, and he just talks about how North America, the bike industry, is dominated by a mentality of athletics and selling these really high-level sporting bikes. Legs and I are currently talking about a class where we'd offer a class to kind of help people solve some of these problems. And this is before we even found this article, and we have a general feeling, and that's because I remember when I got back into cycling in my 40s, I hadn't been on a bike for a couple of decades, and I had a little nervousness around it. And so the question that I have for you is, like, what's your general impression of this? And we've been doing research on these wonderful handmade bike companies, and I'm curious what the trends are in making a more upright city bike versus more of a touring or faster bike. Kind of what are the trends?
I don't know if you... I think that probably the more bikes that are of the upright style are mountain bikes or cruising bikes. More of those, of course, number-wise, would be sold. The handmade, artisans will make you anything you want. And some of the bikes that I'm seeing, a lot of them are traditional, what I call them, if you're a novice, like 10-speed frame. But they're using the flat bar instead of the curved bar, a little bit more upright position, so a shorter stem to make it easier, and flat pedals and so forth. Many times it's just a single-speed bike. But not, as that article said, a fixie, which is a fixed gear where you, you can't coast. So these allow you to coast. And where it's just to cruise around town or where there's not a lot of hills. And also there's been a large interest in cargo style bikes where people are designing bikes and making them for people, even custom, where there is a way to carry things on them. And I think that seems to be something that a lot of people are into, not just these really fast racing bikes, which most people say, oh, that's so uncomfortable. It's hard on my back. It's hard on my leg, whatever, arms. Yeah, there is more of an upright style out there. But it's always sort of been that way. But it's probably now, people are making crossover style bikes that will do a lot of things that are more comfortable. You have options now.
That's awesome. Yeah, I had this idea that we would, on each episode, we'd come up with kind of one of the handmade bikes, where they were headed, what vegetable they were coming home with, and, kind of a little imaginary journey, which we'll see if we do it. But our goal is to, get people on bicycles and we often, you know, are talking about this not on the podcast as well, and just the fact that the bicycle may be the thing that would have the biggest impact on a person's life for living a slow life, because you're going to slowly go to the store. You're going to be thinking, like, what's going to be in that basket for dinner, you know, and where you're going. And then you're going to see people on the way. You might take a little side route and go, you know, let's go over here because
explore. You don't really explore in a car.
Right.
You know, you don't.
You're thinking about your parking spot and how crowded it's going
to
be.
Or what's the quickest way to get from point A to point B, and you never think, oh, well, I'm just going to drive, take this little road this way and that little road that way. And so if it takes me another 15 minutes, I can personally say, I don't think when I'm driving a car that I want to spend an extra 15 minutes in a car, but I'd have no problem spending an extra 15 minutes on a bike or a half hour. Yeah, and I think that's a really cool thing that people could do. And when you think about your food, I can tell you that it's not just thinking about the food. You get hungry and more excited about what you're going to eat when you put a little exercise in and got some fresh air. And so it makes eating more enjoyable.
And I think some of this too, like a culture of a biking town, like in the Netherlands, people are moving, you know. There's a decent speed on those upright bikes as well.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like fish, you know, a school of fish, and how everybody's moving, and when everyone learns the route, and how, and when more and more people cycle, you know, just like how everyone drives on the road, like everybody figures it out and it's all moving. But I think if you had a lot of people who were traveling fast and then people at a slower speed, you know, it seems as though it'd be interesting to learn about Davis and how it developed over time. And if they, like, how they manage that. I think people just need to know the rules of the road, stay on the right as you do driving, and look, and then people who are zooming have a little bit of courtesy. If you look ahead, that's, you know, if you look ahead and someone seems a little wobbly, you might want to just slow it down a little bit when you're cruising past.
Yep, and say, you know, on your left, you know.
Yeah.
Right, so.
And it seems like the less experienced you are, even hiking, we'll be hiking and I'll be a little frustrated but when someone bikes past you and they don't.
But when you say on your left, you have to do it in a way that not to scare them.
You know,
so there's a whole art in letting another cyclist know where you are. So that, you know, and that's just part of being polite though.
Well, I think a little farther back is good because if you're already on their fanny, it's a little jarring.
So yeah, but, you don't want to startle anybody. And also, back to the Netherlands or a place like that. In Europe as a whole, there is a, it's ingrained in them that people ride bicycles. And so it's sort of a mindset that they don't get upset with bicycles, that bicycles are just a part of transportation throughout that area. And so all I can do is speak for myself that when I rode in Europe, I did not get very hassled by cars and people yelling at you and being angry. And if you're polite and follow the rules, like you said, ride single file, not, you know, two or three abreast on a two-lane road, people will give you some slack. And so it's just maybe what we're talking about also is but maybe just, you know, getting it out there, trying to change the mindset that you can ride a bicycle in the U.S., that there are safe ways of doing it. And if more and more people rode a bike, more and more people would then embrace it like it's been embraced in Europe. You know, I've dreamed about that, and, you know, everything has to start somewhere. It's getting better, so.
Yeah, maybe another episode will list, there's a ranking of bike cities, how well they're doing. And it would be fun to know, you know.
I'd like to know for myself.
DC's a good one. But if people started riding, then that their town would improve. And if I were to start riding in a place like, you know, I think you could take a look at the main thoroughfares and you could set your route and just, you know, set out to not go on those really heavily trafficked roads. And then hopefully you're in a city which has bike bike lanes, and they've already figured that out because they want
to
move
better.
You through the
exactly.
city.
It's getting better.
I'm sure Chico has that with the college. There's some good bike lanes, and we're going to be exploring that very soon because we're moving there, and that'll be fun. Anything else? That was great.
Yeah.
Slow culture. Let's live a slower culture. That sounds good to me.
One day at a time. Just keep practice a slow life.
All right. Well, thanks
Thank
for
you,
listening.
Everyone.
See you soon.
Bye, everyone.
Down life's lane, searching for the why of all the pain he knows.
Thank you for listening to the Liggs and Lizzie Punk Farm Love Life podcast. Please subscribe to be notified of new episodes. It really helps us if you leave a review.
We'd love to have you join our Patreon family. When you join, for as little as $5 per month, we'll personally thank you on the podcast. You'll also receive special episodes and videos from us. Podcast music is by Lizzie's brother, who goes by Squint Todd and the Horse Thieves. See the show notes for links to other things we mentioned.
Be safe and happy until next time.
Do stuff, don't buy stuff.
Peace, punk, plants.
We don't need much, we just need each other.
strangers cry. Drift